Good morning, everyone. This is Rob Duggar. And who do we have on the call at this point?
Bob Pollock from Washington University in St. Louis.
Great.
Dennis Dumno in Salt Lake.
Dennis, welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Lindsay Dolce in Denver.
Oh, hey, Lindsay.
Janet Curry
at Carnegie
Mellon.
Hi, Janet Curry. Let's go ahead and say the names again, one at a time. I know you can't tell who is going to speak. Just if you hear someone else speaking when you speak, just go ahead and say your name again.
Limor Golan, Carnegie Mellon.
Great. Welcome.
Lauren Walters, University of Chicago.
Terrific.
Carol Walters in Michigan.
Excellent.
This is Kate Franco, UCLA.
Wow, a lot of people.
Kate Franker sitting in for Peter Gluckman.
Okay.
Sarah Watson from Pew Charitable Trust.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey.
Very good. Welcome.
Stephen Durloff, University of Wisconsin.
Excellent. Thank you, Stephen.
Art Rolnick here, University of Minnesota.
Hey, Art. Good morning.
Morning, Rob.
Angela Duckworth, University of Pennsylvania.
Angela.
Andy Davis, State of Illinois.
Terrific.
Fraser Musser.
Try again.
Fraser Mustard in Toronto.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Rodrigo Pinto at the University of Chicago.
Marvelous. Good morning.
Hi, Verma Conte at University of Chicago.
Very good. Well, we've reached 10:05, and the rule on this conference call, Jim and I have discussed this at length. The conference call will begin on the hour on the second. It will end 55 minutes after the hour on the second. From now on, we will arrange the conference call so that people can call in advance of the hour, because we will begin on the hour. And as generally, as you know, in many conference calls, it takes about 5 minutes for people to kind of feed into a conference call. Fortunately, at this point, we probably have succeeded in doing that. People may have tried the number and may be trying again. So we probably have very nearly a full conference call at this point. So I'm going to begin. All of you.
This is Scott Krakinski from Congressman Jared Polis's office.
Very good. Welcome.
Thanks.
I'm going to ask you to do is to take a look at your email from the last 20 minutes or so, and you'll see one from Allison Bowles that contains the PDF meeting summary that we're going to follow. Another glitch was, for whatever reason, it didn't load onto the website. So we've resent it this morning and need all of you to go to that email, open it up, and have open a PDF of a slideshow called the Human Capital Economic Opportunity Working Group and Building a Global Human Capital Research Network. That's what we're going to follow this morning. The agenda is pretty straightforward. I'm going to give a bit of do the sort of administrative thing that I do with these things and talk a little bit about the history and what the resources are. INET, kind of funding is available from INET, and kind of how the topical working groups will operate. Jim will then give us the big picture, his comments about human capital research stands in the field of economics, the direction of work that he is leading on a separate, very large grant from a variety of sources. His work is supported by a variety of foundations and institutes, including the Institute for New Economic Thinking, and some comments about the need for global collaboration and how and why kind of we have put this together. So let me me just go ahead and say that...
United, please.
United. Yep, welcome. This working group is a...
Yeah, Fumi has also been on the call.
Thank you. Welcome. Let me say two things to all of you on the call right now. If you receive other calls or in a noisy environment, please put us on mute, and that's you just press star 6, and that puts you on mute. If you have to leave the conference call to take a call or answer the call of nature or whatever, hang up and then put us back on and then call back in. The reason for that is many of you have hold music. Hang up and we get the hold music. There's nothing we can do about it except to terminate the call and then to restart it again. And because you won't call in, the hold music won't be on the call. So if you have to leave the call, don't put us on hold. We can't take the risk of having the call disrupted by call waiting music, as nice as it is in the institutions where many of you work.
Rob, can I say one thing just so people know? Because I actually had to hang up and call back again. Is you mentioned how to mute the phone, but you didn't mention how to unmute the phone, which is
star six.
Pound 6. Or star
pound,
six.
Sure.
Yeah, so,
usually star 6 mutes it and star 6 unmutes it.
Okay, I think it was pound 6, but okay.
Well, pound 6, try that too.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. This working group is part of a long effort by a lot of people and has grown from the work that many have done over the years on early child education and care. The sort of recent past 7 years of it or so are reflected in the work of the Investing Kids Working Group that got started with a three-way call with Jim Heckman, Art Rolnick, and myself. That working group identified five areas of research in the United States, focusing on the microeconomic returns of various interventions in early childhood, prenatal to 5, ranging from maternal nutrition in pregnancy, low birth weight babies, infant care, toddler care, and pre-kindergarten. That work indicated a wide range of economic benefits from specific programs. Those are sort of the microeconomics. The second area was macroeconomics. There we were attempting to aggregate the microeconomic effects into larger estimates of economic growth and development, job creation. That work saw papers in 2005 and 2006 of the Investing Kids Working Group, and most recently a book by Tim Bartik entitled Investing in Kids. Investing in Kids, Early Childhood Programs and Local Economic Development. This work aligned very closely with the findings of Art Rolnick and his colleagues in their work on early child development and strategies for economic growth, particularly for investing in kids as a strategy which stands on a par with virtually everything else that state and local governments do to promote local and regional growth. The working group morphed into something called the Partnership for America's Economic Success, and that continued the work in the areas of sector definition, as well as macroeconomics and growth. Sector definition is a line of inquiry that looks at youth human capital development from prenatal to 5 and prenatal to 18 as a separate and identifiable sector of an economy, much like agriculture or finance or transportation. These are sectors that most people can very quickly identify, but very rarely do economists talk about human capital or youth human capital development as a 18 to 20 year process of producing a relaxed, ready for work, family and community effective young adult. Fourth area of research was finance. how do you pay for child interventions at any age? How do you pay for them if they indeed prove to have the economic returns that you suspect? We have formed a separate early childhood innovation finance working group of the Partnership for America's Economic Success. That's a project of the Kauffman Foundation and the partnership that is meeting regularly now to devise specific income contingent contracts, financing contracts, to such as quality pre-kindergartens, reduction in special education costs. These would be a contract between a group of philanthropists or investors with a school system, and in which the savings are shared in some way or another, and a large portion of those savings reinvested in more quality pre-kindergarten until the return on those savings is driven to the additional reductions in costs and special education costs goes to zero. The fourth area is advocacy, and this has to do with what it is that how you would communicate the benefits of interventions in youth human capital, prenatal to 18, how would you communicate them, and there are a host of those. This led to being fed into the work of the Institute for New Economic Thinking that emerged as a result of a number of philanthropists, and the most important of which was George Soros, in establishing the institute. The website there is ineteconomics.org. It is the primary funder of this human capital working group project, and it saw human capital and economic development and inequality as factors which account for important dimensions of the 2007-2008 financial crisis. But because mainstream economics does not view human capital as a in the same way it views, say, rational expectations or general equilibrium resolution, it does not look at human capital as a key ingredient of a production function that would provide for stable growth or stable path, it missed it. And as a consequence, INET wanted to focus on human capital and economic development and inequality specifically, and provided a large grant to Jim Heckman to take the lead on a global process to reestablish human capital as an important ingredient of large, broad economic thinking. This you can see the grants for this area listed on the INET webpage under current grants. It lists the initiatives and lists the areas in which it was accepting applications. The application deadline has passed. We did send a note, I think, to everybody a month or so ago indicating the availability of the grants. But the purpose of INET is to reinvigorate thinking in a wide range of areas, including human capital, and reinvigorate that thinking all the way down to undergraduate studies and curriculum, graduate studies and postgraduate as a way of developing economics, the human capital economics, as an integral part of what undergraduates and graduate students learn in economics. All of this work was being done and powerfully motivated by a guy who I think is just one of the best minds in economics I've ever met, and that's Jim Heckman. Jim and I first became aware of Jim's work in 2003 and 2004. We began working together, me mainly as a fundraiser and he as a lead researcher in a wide range of work primarily building on the findings of Perry, Avi Sedarian, and Chicago Child Parent programs, what information could be brought from those. Jim's research was presented repeatedly during the early years of the Invest in Kids Working Group, and now is his work is spanning everything from pre-kindergarten to nutrition, parenting, and the neuroscience of early care and education and later life effects. He is the director of this project. I am the co-director, but mainly the administrator. And in charge of it all is Allison Balos, whom I want to personally thank for doing the hard work of application completion, execution of the application, the administration of it, getting the website up and working, and indeed up until this phone call, everything that this working group has done has been done with Allison and her colleagues, and she's just done a great job getting a brand new global project off and running from ground zero just a few months ago. So Allison, thanks from me, and I think thanks from everyone else involved in this project. What I'd like to do now is say a word about the topical working groups. These are described later in the PowerPoint beginning on page 10. The topical working groups are the subgroups of the global working group. On page 11, what we've done is initially defined seven groups just to get discussion started. But the leaders of those groups may redefine them, and you are welcome to establish new groups. Let us know, and we'll coordinate in and bringing them into existence. The leaders of each group, as I mentioned on page 12, the leaders of each group will convene an initial meeting of their working group in the next month or so and lay out the areas of work and discussion. The leaders will send a note to all the rest of us telling us what their conclusions are, and then thereafter the work of those working groups will be done within the working group and continually posted on the group's web page. And I'll mention, to the considerable relief of working group leaders, we do have the capability of excluding obstructive or disruptive people, and we definitely will use it because we want these working groups to be effective in what they do. Let's see. I'm skipped over and just did in a kind of cursory way the slides on page 3 about the Human Capital Working Group, its purpose. This global working group will focus on all aspects of human capital development, health, behavior, education, and training, as we explain on page 4, including finance and policy. You're on this call, and there are, another equal number of people in Asia and Latin America who may not be on this call, especially since, for example, Alice Hill in Australia, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, she's going to listen to it on the tape that'll be on the website. If you know of people who should be members of this global working group, just let us know. And I mentioned membership open to any researcher, policymaker, or provider of human capital development services, and especially to any undergraduate, graduate, or postgraduate student doing work in this area. And that includes, by work in this area, anything in health, psychology, as well as economics and science of any sort. What the Human Capital Working Group will provide is a community in which discussion and collaboration can take place, opportunities for research funding, and a working paper series. And if you have them, Jim has already posted one. You can follow his good example. send it to humcap at the University of Chicago .edu, and we will get it posted. Allison will receive it and take the steps to get it posted. We'll generally be meeting fairly regularly. Jim's working group process will be ongoing at the University of Chicago. Members, depending on their working groups and their involvement, will be invited to Chicago for visits to be in contact with the work that Jim is doing. You'll be able to post blogs on the working group to explain your work and concerns and focus, comments and criticism of other people's work. All the website postings and web meeting videos and so forth will be on the website for later listening and viewing. We'll also provide all the topical working groups, conference call, and web meeting support. The Global Working Group does one additional thing that's very important. It provides a public way for press, other researchers, to be able to monitor and follow what we're doing. It's our hope that by opening up this process to outside sort of at least viewing, general public awareness, philanthropic awareness, institutional awareness, government awareness about the work that is underway globally in human capital development and economic growth and inequality, they'll become aware of it, and we'll find worldwide understanding and support increasing. This is mentioned on page 9. I think that is all that was on my agenda to talk about. What I'd like to do now is turn it over to Jim, the director of the working group. I discussed his work in human capital. As you know, he's a winner of the Nobel Prize in econometrics, long, successful history in the economics profession. He's, as you know, a John Bates Clark Medal winner, as well as a Nobel Prize winner, and has been recognized and awarded by just about everybody in the economics profession. Jim, would you take a few minutes or as long as you need? What we need to do is leave time, 15 to 20 minutes towards the end, to answer questions and get comments and suggestions from people on where they think we should put our emphasis. But I think that if you would kindly kind of lay out your views on where human capital research is within the field of economics and the direction of the work that you're doing and the need to involve people in Asia and Latin America and Europe and elsewhere in our work, that would be, this is the time to do it. Jim, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you very much, Rob. Let me ask people to turn to page 11 of the handout that, or the posted outline that Rob was speaking from. And that defines the current working groups that are really quite broad, organized around the general theme of inequality and understanding inequality in a very broad way, but trying to put together pieces of it. So I think the work will be done. The focus really is on inequality and its determinants. We think that youth human capital is quite important, and so there's an emphasis clearly in this. But we also really want to think more broadly as well. And the working groups, the sub-working groups, if you want to call it that, really represent a range of interests that are all motivated around the idea of trying to devise effective policies and to really understand both conceptually and empirically what good policy would be. And so what I think what the goal of this group is I hope will be realized, is to involve a process of dialogue and integration. So, of course, any specific outcomes will require specific discussions. And so within each of the seven groups that you see listed on page 11, there will be conferences, there will be specific working groups that will meet not only by telephone and maybe through the Internet, but as well as working conferences that involve face-to-face discussions and hopefully working papers and discussion papers. But the theme here, I think, and this is a theme that I think is exciting, is to really try to integrate different perspectives in a way that is still intellectually serious. I mean, there's a lot of attempt, a lot of crosstalk where people are not really listening to each other. I'm not asking for a huge amount of tolerance, but I am asking for a certain intellectual standard. And I think what we'd like to do is really understand the foundations of inequality. And there are conceptual issues, for example, Steve Durloff and his network on measuring and interpreting inequality. Steve has done a tremendous amount of research on really understanding the philosophical and empirical basis for understanding inequality, not just the inequality that begins in early childhood, but also inequality broadly defined across societies and so forth. There's a goal that we have here to try to integrate the micro and the macro policy. There's typically a bifurcation that occurs. I think it's unfortunate. And I think the Milton Friedman Institute, I know Lars Hansen's on the phone, maybe he'd like to talk for a minute or two about this after I finish. But I think one thing that there is another independent initiative, which hopefully will be integrated with this initiative, to integrate the understanding of micro and macro financial markets and so forth. So we think about credit constraints affecting schooling. We think about possible ways of financing future investments and what the link is really between macro and micro markets. So Lance Lochner has done a lot of work on the micro foundations of this and also partially looking at the structure of how macro markets affect micro lending markets and so forth. But there's a lot of research to be done. As Raghu Rajan's new book on fault lines really illustrates, that there is a very strong relationship between the human capital policies or lack thereof in the past and some of the alternative policies that were pursued to face the rising problem of inequality, the inequality problem of the last 30 years. So the idea, I think, is to build on this. And then, of course, we have work on health that Janet Curry and Gabriella Conti are organizing. And anybody looking at the issue of inequality, at least at the individual level, recognizes an important role for the family and for social institutions generally. And so we have several groups looking at questions of social interactions and family inequality in particular. Pierre-André Caparì and Marco Concanato are leading that group. But there's also an issue of people trying to understand the origins of differences. There's been a lot of interest in behavioral economics, identity, and the like. And so an attempt to really broaden the understanding and to get the foundations of preferences and to get the foundations really of inequality really understood. We also have a group which is defined as the Identity and Psychology Group, led by two psychologists actually, but working with a range of economists, looking at the role of personality and looking at the role of preferences. And again, the goal being to try to broaden the discussion of inequality to understand what effective policies might be. And so I know I have a limited amount of time and I'm approaching the end of it, but let me just argue that I think this is quite exciting for two reasons. One, each of these individual topics is worth pursuing, and the goal is to try to integrate macro and micro and to have things building on evidence and to draw, I think, on the strengths of other subfields within economics and then fields outside of economics so that we can really understand what will be effective policy trade-offs. And therefore, I think the goal is to develop frameworks that allow us to effectively understand economic policy and in a broad way understand economic policy. At the same time, trying to provide a forum for dissenting points of view. And as long as the dissent is basically structured along evidence-based lines and model-based lines, this is exactly what the INET group is trying to encourage, to try to have a rigorous base for policy analysis and to think about what the trade-offs would be. For example, Rob has emphasized youth human capital, but one issue that many people will say, and it's on the agenda now for many governments, is to say, well, let's think about job training programs and adult remediation programs as a possible alternative. And so what's the evidence on their effectiveness? What do we know about the dynamics of skill formation? And what can we say in terms of what both macro and micro policies might be and what their likely effect will be, both in the short run and the long run? And I think this forum provides kind of a new voice, a new way to essentially organize thinking. There isn't any monolithic idea here, and I strongly, strongly believe in the idea of having dissenting voices. I mean, one doesn't want a Tower of Babel, and so we want to organize these groups. We want to make them open, and I think it's very important that we have open discussions. And so in some way, I see this as stirring up the pot. There may be too many pots here, but there's not only the work within each of the subgroups, but there will be people going across the subgroups trying to integrate. And, of course, people are welcome to participate one way or the other in each of these groups. But to be effective, we're going to have to organize conferences, and the leaders, I think, will take a major role in doing that. So I would just ask Lars briefly, since we're hooked up with the MFI, to see what he sees as the role of INET and its relationship with MFI.
Sure. Thank you, Jim. So the MFI is really anxious to build bridges across a whole variety of different areas that touch in economics. We're right now in the process of launching multiple initiatives. Both Jim and Gary are busy getting stuff going on economics of the family, which would certainly interact with some important questions that will be explored here. This spring and by this summer, working with Tom Sargent and others, we'll be launching an initiative on fiscal imbalance, which our aim is really to bring together both micro and macro type evidence here, micro and macro type perspectives on this, on the important topic of fiscal imbalance and its long-term government consequences. That, you know, issues related to fiscal imbalance and play off into some other initiative we have on systemic risk to financial systems and sovereign debt and the like. So what's exciting for us is that, you know, is to bring together these multiple initiatives, to bring together people from a variety of different areas and to see if we can't help to nurture some important synergies.
Okay. I mean, Rob, I don't know if we have time for each of the subgroup leaders to speak, but maybe.
Well, I think that's actually probably a good idea. You've left a little time. Let's go ahead and invite them to. I've spoken long enough, so I don't think there's anything for me to say about my subgroup. But go ahead and introduce the subgroup leaders, and each one of you just take a moment or two and talk a little bit about what your group wants to do. And then we'll open it up. We should have plenty of time. If we can finish that all in about 5 minutes, we will be able to have a good 15 minutes or so of discussion and questions, suggestions from probably quite strong-willed people on what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. So go ahead,
Jim.
Well,
the strong will, I think, is great. I mean, the only thing I ask is that that people not be burned at the stake for having dissenting views. That the stake be slightly different, namely some arguments and disagreements. I really do believe this in the area of the study of inequality, we have to be fairly broad. It might stretch the abilities of everyone to be this broad, but nonetheless, I think it's exciting. So I'll start with Steve Durloff, since his face is staring out at me here at the bottom of the page. Steve, are you...
But I mean, we'll discuss this next time I see you. So the extremely narrow mandate of the group that Jim was kind enough to ask me to head on measuring and interpreting inequality, as I see it, is to represent both the philosophical and some methodological sides of this massive project. And so what I mean by that is that brings up a general concept such as inequality, it begs the question as to how one would measure it, since there's so many dimensions in which one can think about inequality, you know, be it outcomes or opportunities, intergenerational versus cross-sectional and the like. And the sense in which any of those is a particular policy interest is going to depend on some value judgments, and so that provides a natural segue between thinking about inequality as a stochastic process, as it were, in a society, and particular conceptualizations of justice. And so that's part of the reason why it's appropriate to integrate the measurement issues with what appear to be philosophical questions.
Yes.
And then once one takes that step, It turns out that it's essential to talk about the mechanisms by which inequality is generated. It's one thing to say that Bill Gates's entrepreneurial genius led to inequality with respect to himself and the rest of the income distribution. It's quite another thing to say that the conditions in the inner city preclude talented individuals from fulfilling their potential. And so for that reason, one ends up with a triad in which the measurement issues, the associated justice issues, and the question of the identification of causal, or I don't want to use that, just simply say the identification of mechanisms naturally integrate to provide the basis for thinking about policy.
Great, Steve. Now, you're probably involved Branko Milanovic, and you've no doubt seen his new book.
Yes, so he's already been invited to participate.
Right, yes, good, and a deep investigator of the sort of philosophical kind of good equality and bad equality questions you touched on. Who's next, Jim?
Well, I'll just say I'll go up the list here. Angela, are you on the line still?
I'm here. I'm Angela Duckworth. I'm an assistant professor in psychology here at Penn. I've been working with Jim and also with Steve and some other folks that I've now just learning their identities by scrolling down through the website. I guess where I've been doing work on this topic is the question about whether children's self-control and persistence, among other personality traits, can in part account for, the achievement gap at younger ages, which, of course, persists, if not widens, at older ages.
Is Akerlof's and Isaac's work part of your thinking on this?
I don't know Akerlof's. I mean, I only know it sort of by – I don't know it in detail. It should be. I mean, I think that one of the things that we're realizing is that psychologists and economists are, often studying the exact same things in completely separate literatures using vocabularies which are not entirely easy to translate in a kind of one-to-one. There are so many assumptions and that go into, when we say a word like trait and when economists say words like preference that, you spend a lot more time than you would like just kind of figuring out. It's a bit like power of Babel.
Right.
So I assume that the reason for bringing on psychologists, I'm not the only one here. I guess I'm representing Brett Roberts, who's the other apparent leader of our working group. I have to say Brett and I are a little bit new to this. We didn't have a whole lot of context for this call, but that's fine.
Just getting started.
So I assume that the reason to have us on board is to lay some of that foundational work in terms of what do you mean by trait, what do you mean by preference, and then to integrate these literatures. There has been a lot done on inequality in small samples using very rich measures, not asking the kinds of broader policy questions that I think this working group is tasked to answer. So if anything, we should be able to, link up the literatures. We should know more about what's going on in economics as a start.
Mm-hmm.
And that would include behavioral economics, though. I mean, we've been integrating that closely. Let me just, is Pierre André on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Maybe you could talk briefly about what the plans are. I mean, the family we know is a locus of, many people would say, the prime source of at least individual inequality. Markets play a big role, but there are active plans along the lines of trying to look at the economics of the family, and I'd just be curious about your thinking, Pierre-André.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm very excited by this initiative. I had some email contact with Marco, co-chairing the group, but we didn't meet in person, so that's very preliminary. But so first of all, talking about human capital.
But you will in about a week and a half in Barcelona, I think.
Yes, exactly. So we will see each other. First of all, human capital is generated in various institutions, but the first and probably the most important is the family. So if you want to think in terms of human capital, the family is crucial. And in particular, if you want to think in terms of policy, there are plenty of policies that have an impact on the family, not only on the family as a whole, but also on the distribution of roles and powers and within the family. And these are things that we would like to understand. And by exactly the same token, if we think about inequality, first of all, in general, most measures of inequality are inequality across households. And an aspect which is quite often neglected is inequality within households. And we know from the ethnological literature that it might be quite important, in particular in some societies, women might have a much smaller share of the total resources than men. And this is an aspect of inequality you want to think about. But I think more deeply, the generation of inequality is something that starts at the family, precisely because that's where the inequalities in human capital endowment are generated. So these are things that we would try to dig a little bit deeper and understand. And also the link with macro. There are plenty of macro problems which maybe can be reconsidered in terms of the impact on the family and the impact of the families on the efficiencies of the macro policies. So that's my view on this. So that's a very preliminary view on this.
I understand. Lance, is Lance on the phone?
Yes.
Lance?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, Lars has already spoken a bit about the integration, I mean, the work with Tom Sargent on fiscal imbalances, but I'd be curious about your conception of markets and how you see the interface. You've done a lot of work on credit constraints and lending markets and human capital, but you might want to talk briefly about how you plan to organize that sub-initiative.
Okay. I think right now we've seen over the last 30 years sort of a huge increase in returns and cost to school, and I think putting at the forefront some of these questions about how important credit constraints and financing of human capital investment, how important they've become and whether they've become more important. And I think it's still – there's a number of signs suggesting it has become more important, but I think the jury's still out on some of this. I guess I view the literature is sort of very preliminary on a lot of these issues, and I think the empirical literature is going to be important in trying to find newer and better ways of determining how important credit constraints really are in the financing, how well our markets are financing human capital investment. And at the same time, I think the literature needs to think a lot more about the theoretical foundations of this issue, and that's where I think there's a lot to learn from what macroeconomists have been doing for quite a while on some of these issues. So I guess I would see sort of a two-pronged front, hopefully not as separate prongs, but thinking about both the theory and the empirics of this issue.
Okay, great. Janet? Janet Curry?
Maybe working with the mute buttons. R6 or #6. Janet, if you're still here.
Gabriella, maybe?
I'm here.
Okay. Janet's not on the line. I thought she came on.
Yes, she was on earlier, Jim.
Just a second. I just got here. I finished the class. This is Flavio.
Oh, hi, Flavio.
Hi, Flavio.
Hello.
So Janet was on the line, but she had the flight to take.
Okay.
So she's probably boarding right now.
Well, maybe you could represent them.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Gabriella Conti. I'm a postdoc here at University of Chicago, and I co-chair the Health Inequality Network with the Genicari. And we have had occasion to meet at least a couple of times to talk about this. So if you look at the website, you will see that our network is the one which already has a website with full list of members. And I guess the first thing which comes to your eyes is that it's actually quite interdisciplinary. And so we have members doing work on health from anthropology, economics, epidemiology, epigenetics, and medicine. And what we want to do and what we think is really important these days, that there have been so many advances in genetics and neuroscience, molecular biology, is that we should really take into account all these insights from several disciplines and put into a unified framework. So to build a framework for both the emergence and the evolution of health disparities over the life cycle and across generations, starting even before birth, so before conception, and so incorporating the possibility of having intervention, which not only are like early childhood interventions, but intervention in utero and then also preconception interventions, so starting to intervene in mothers in a fertile age. And so we have learned a lot in these recent years of how health starts before birth, and it's really, you know, a hot topic these days to understand how health develops and how it evolves over the life cycle, both, you know, in the U.S. because of all this debate about health insurance and also related to the importance of nutrition and the prevention of lifestyle chronic diseases. It's another thing that we hope to do, and we build up this integrated framework, is to basically have an integrated approach to health, which is lacking, we think, in the current academic debate and in public policies, because usually health policy is treated as distinct from education policy or a family policy. But as you know, Pierre André was also saying, there are all these interrelationships and all these synergies. So a family policy could be, you know, a good health policy to the extent that it allocates resources within the family in a way to support the health of the children. And so we really hope that, you know, we will be able to talk among ourselves and to recreate also, you know, a common language. And I mean, me and Professor Ekman, we are already working with some of the members of the network, and I would say really productively, and I'm sure this will continue. I'm very, very, very excited and grateful to you and Robert for this initiative.
Okay. So, I mean, Rob, I don't know if you want to talk separately. You pretty much announced the objectives before, but
I think we're in good order. I think we should go to questions and comments. And Jim, if I'm going to ask for unanimous
consent.
Well,
let me just make one last remark.
Sure.
I really do want to emphasize that, I mean, this is very broad, and it may be so broad as to be impossible for anybody or any group to digest, but I don't think so, in the sense that, first of all, boundaries are permeable here, and there should be a lot of crossing, at least examination of what other people are doing. Secondly, there will be specific research, though, within each of the groups. So it won't just be generalities. I think there really will be specifics. I mean, just to take this one question about the integration between micro and macro markets, that's a huge issue. And I think it's under-researched. And to lay the empirical and theoretical foundations for that would itself be enough for the initiative. But I think one can go further. And so looking at, for the larger question, at the same time building up the pieces so that it's so that they're rigorous and at least well understood, I think it's going to be a valuable exercise. So for decades, maybe for since the beginning of the subject of economics, people have been talking about integrating macro and micro, at least in various terms. But I think here there's a real opportunity for doing just that, because there's a very solid, very strong group of people within the larger Milton Friedman Institute looking at markets and looking at the integration of markets and looking at markets and interpreting what's going on. And I just think it'd be nice once and for all to kind of break this isolation. And I really do think it's more than just a methodological goal. I think it's going to lead to serious policy evaluation, which I think in the end is what this whole thing is about.
Exactly, Jim. That's said perfectly. I know for myself, I want to join the markets group as quickly as possible. Much of the work that we're doing in the YHC, Youth Human Capital Economic Development, actually is the sort of the microeconomics of finance. How do you actually get the money to free up the resources for the kinds of productive programs that are possible. Jim, I'm going to suggest that we go to the end of the hour. Since we started 5 minutes late, effectively, I'm going to ask if we can sort of agree to take the additional 5 minutes and open it up to questions and comments from people and give them a little extra time.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Could I start? This is Fumi Olopade. I have to leave, but I
sure.
I just want to thank you for organizing this, and it's really very exciting. One question I have for you is whether you would find a way to expand and find economists who maybe specialize in Africa, especially sub-Saharan Africa, because I'm not aware of any, but I wonder whether we could figure out a way to broaden and include them.
We absolutely. I do a lot of work in Tanzania.
I'm an
investor and do a lot of work in wildlife conservation and community development in Tanzania. And I agree with you completely. And if you know of any names, just forward them on to them, us. We will be in contact them. We will actively encourage them to participate.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yes.
Can I ask, this is Angela Duckworth. Could you give us a little more direction on your expectations for what the working group leaders are meant to accomplish in the next months?
Ideally, Angela, each working group should have a conference call within the next month or so to have a discussion among the initial members, kind of square up kind of what the goals and purposes are, and reach out and involve individuals that you know or who are members of the broader group who may not have indicated an interest, but actually have work in the area that that interests you, that's the focus of the working group. So, for example, with respect to identity and psychology, Akerlof and Isaacs work specifically on an economic idea called identity. And it is not squarely psychological, but it clearly would relate. And so a reaching out to them to be involved in that group would be a kind of natural thing. In my own area, clearly the working group that I have would focus significantly on the kind of thinking that Art Rolnick and Tim Bartik are focused on, economic development and youth human capital development. But we're also doing a lot of work in specific finance strategies, income contingent and performance contingent finance, which should be a component of the markets. So maybe we form linkages between those two working groups. But in any case, if the leaders of the working groups can convene at least a conference call over the next month or so, and to clarify to the broader global working group, the topical working groups can clarify kind of what those focuses are, it'll make it easier for everybody to organize themselves and affiliate with the working groups that are going to be most productive for their purposes.
Okay, great.
Let me just add one footnote to that, a comment, and that is to say that there really are resources for organizing conferences per se.
Yes.
Not just websites. There will be resources for that, but also the idea is to really get down to business and doing research.
Yes.
And organizing, you know, conferences that will really pull things together, but, you know, try to get some sense of what research frontiers are, what the open question is in the area, and what would be fruitful way. But hopefully, too, people will integrate across the group.
Yes, that's, exactly, Jim. Yes.
And that's where Rob and I might be stretched way too thin, so I hope you can agree to that. Well, we are under any event, but the fact of the matter is that it would be productive, I think, to try to sort of go across the groups and for others to go across the groups. There's enough intellectual curiosity represented in this collective phone call and people just trying to see what's going on. But I think it's personally exciting to see how these various kinds of interpenetrations and thinking and developments of thinking really will lead to some great ideas. So dissent is great, and providing some kind of preliminary synthesis of dissent, not in a sense of just a committee report, but in a sense of really doing something specific and enriching the fields that people are working in, would be valuable. And so there's got to be integration, there's got to be specialization, both.
Allison, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to jump in and say we also wanted to have a another call with just the group leaders, and then also I'll be following up with each of you individually. As Gabriella said, her website is the first one up. We wanted to get one up, see how it works, see what we could do, and then each group will have the opportunity to specialize theirs, how they see and need it to work for the way that they will collaboratively do the work of their group.
So this is Stephen Gerlach.
Hello, Jim. Can you hear me?
We have two people
calling from Hong Kong.
Okay, go ahead. Hong Kong.
Yeah. I have been listening all hours, and I also want to thank you for organizing this. I think this is very important, not academically, but also for the future generations. Yeah. I just want to thank you for that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you for being part of it.
Let me just say, on the future generation, that's key. So
yes.
Really, in the family, for example, I don't want to put words in Pierre André's mouth, but I think in the family group, the idea is to try to organize things so that the, if you want to call it the old guard or the senior figures, will also very much cultivate the junior research groups. And I think that's going to be true generally throughout all of these areas, to try to bring on and foster the young, and not just having a meeting of the old timers, remembering the good old days, but thinking about what things will look like 30 or 40 years from now, which I think is the way to go in general. So we can shape an agenda and also train a new generation and help that training. So I completely agree with Jensen.
Oh, absolutely.
This is Marco. Yes, so I agree with what Jean said. So the idea is to kind of push ahead new ideas and be creative and use economic models. That's going to be a very important keyword to address new issues and try to better understand existing questions, foster new data gathering, and really try to be as rigorous as we can to give the contribution to the understanding of human capital. So definitely there's going to be a very energetic group of young people that's going to go in this direction.
I think this is an enormous, this is Bob Pollack. I think this is an enormously exciting venture, and I'm very happy to be part of it.
Great, Bob. Thank you.
Great.
Bob Rolnick, are you out there?
I'm out here, Rob.
What are you thinking?
That's very exciting. One comment, though, and I would have started not with inequality. I would have started with poverty because you run into this issue of good inequality, bad inequality.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very ambitious program, and I think there's a need for it. But I think to focus it a little better, it may be more productive. I could be wrong about that, but I know when you talk about inequality, it starts to get into some issues that I think will not be productive. But I think if you focus on poverty, I think you might have a better chance. But that's a first thought, and obviously something that needs to be considered. And also, and it sounded like you were getting into this, I think for an umbrella organization, you need to define if it's going to be inequality or poverty. I think you should start out with as broad but as in the same sense concise definition of the issue that you want everybody to address, and to make sure that everybody is addressing it, because it's easy, I think, to get off track. And trying to get interdisciplinary work done is not easy to begin with, and it's going to be that much harder if you don't have a reasonably well-defined broad agenda.
Well, I'd be worried. One thing, though, I don't want to define it too narrowly either, in the sense of saying everybody's working on the same problem. That is surely not going to be true. I mean, just the nitty-gritty of understanding how credit markets are affecting finance educational decisions and post-schooling decisions and so forth is a huge issue by itself. And it does touch on inequality and poverty, inequality. I'm personally willing to be flexible. But I do think that we should also recognize that this isn't all pointed to, like, one final conclusion that in a few years, we're all going to send. I think probably in a few years, we'll probably all violently disagree, but hopefully at a high level. So I just say, yes, maybe poverty, but the trouble with poverty is there's just multiple definitions of that concept as well.
No, you're right. Now, as I was saying it, I recognize the concerns. Of course, you have the same thing with inequality. But the challenge to get the interdisciplinary approach, I think, is enormous because of incentives. The incentives in universities are not for interdisciplinary. They're just not. And we're working at this at Humphrey, and as I've gotten involved in Humphrey and realize how difficult it is to get the languages consistent to motivate people to work across fields is very difficult unless you have a very compelling agenda, which I think you have, by the way. I find this very exciting, but I think some more thought should be given to the question, what do you want from your subgroups and what are you looking for? Now, again, if it's too narrow, you're not going to get there. So it's got to reach a good balance, and that's what you guys are getting paid for, I think.
This is Rob Duggar. I did say at the outset we will conclude on the hour. It is a little bit past the hour, and as we have done many times, we know that we will not reach a conclusion, but the meeting will come to an end. And I want to thank everybody who's been on the call. This is an important body of work that we're undertaking. This is a hugely important, possibly for the, I tend to think this is so important that it will affect future policy. It will affect future economic growth and development. And I think that by bringing together all these disciplines, by bringing together and being willing to live with different meanings of different words, inequality versus poverty versus opportunity, all the different words that have been developed to deal with different political perspectives,
if we're able to live and work within all of that, I think we can make an important contributions to economic understanding, add to growth, add to job creation, achieve fiscal sustainability, and many, many good things. But, Jim, any last word and bring us to a closure?
No, I just look forward to working with everybody and learning from everybody. So that's my own.
That's good enough. Thanks, everybody, for being on the call. And we'll be in touch by email and other means. And as Allison said, there will be a meeting of the topical working group meetings leaders, and we'll get this process underway. But thanks all up to you. Have a good day or good evening or wherever you are in the world. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.